Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Wall Street, you've gotten billions of dollars without regulation. No more bonuses for the rich. Send the money to Haiti.
New York City Councilman Charles Barron linking the earthquake in Haiti to the earthquake on Wall Street. And we will come back to Haiti later in the program. But let's come back to Wall Street right now. Yesterday, it was the four leading Wall Street firm CEOs who testified before the Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission. Today, it's bank regulators on the hot seat. We are going to listen in live right now for a few minutes. Phil Angelides, the chair of the Inquiry Commission, is questioning Mary Shapiro, who's the head of the Securities and Exchange Commission, and Sheila Bair, who's the head of the FDIC. He's asking both, in the wake of the potential colossal failure of regulation, has a review been done? Sheila Bair from the FDIC is speaking.
Have those documents?
We have for the smaller institutions.
For the smaller, but not for the large
institutions. Not required for the larger institutions.
Right. But both of you will provide us your internal reviews of what broke down. Good.
Yes.
Justice, I don't know if you have done this. I asked earlier today of the Attorney General, but particularly with respect to mortgage fraud, we would like to see that report. Or have you done any other examinations of where enforcement might have broken down?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not aware of that. What I am aware of is that, of course, we have had now for the last few years quite a number of mortgage fraud task forces throughout the country that actually were prosecuting the cases. And as the Attorney General said, our mission, of course, is not that of the regulator. Our mission is to hold those who have broken the laws accountable. With respect to that, we've worked with our partners.
All right. Well, do me a favor. I do want to follow up. I think that review of...
And that's Lanny Breuer from the Justice Department.
Would be very important to know in the wake of potential evidence of mortgage fraud across the country. All right. Let's go to Mr. Wallison.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Chairman Bair, may I start with you. For banks, we rely on regulation to protect us because there is much reduced market discipline because of the backing of banks by the government. And I want to congratulate you and thank you for what I thought was very candid testimony about the deficiencies of regulation in general. But there's one paragraph that caught my attention in particular I'd like to ask you about. You say here in your written testimony, the traditional rules used by safety and soundness regulators, like peer institution analysis, did not detect individual institution excesses because many of the peer institutions also analyzed, engaged in the same risky activities. These activities were profitable until risky activities undertaken by all became unsustainable. What that sounds like is that it's okay or was okay if everyone was doing it. Is that what you meant to say?
I think the supervisory process going into this crisis did rely a lot on peer review and peer comparisons, and that's absolutely right. It's because everyone was doing it and everybody was making money. There wasn't enough scrutiny even within the insured institutions. I think that's absolutely true.
So are you going to change that? Are regulators
we
in
are
general
in the process,
going to change these rules?
So? Well, in terms of the FDIC, yes. We do full scope exams now. We drill down much more farther on individual loan quality. The loan's performing now, making money. Will it perform a year, 2 years from now? That kind of analysis. Much less reliance on, really no reliance on the fact that the guy down the street might be doing the same thing. I do think, though, that feeds into the larger issue of having some type of systemic body to monitor, even though something on an individual institution basis might look okay, if you look at the system as a whole, you might get a different picture. So I do think this is also relates to the need for a council that has a macroprudential framework and mandate.
There were a few other things that you said that I thought were quite interesting and should be in the record. In your written testimony, again, you said record profitability within the financial services industry also served to shield it from some forms of regulatory second guessing.
Mm-hmm.
Another statement, often the potential risks associated with strategies that give rise to outsized profits are not obvious, especially when supervisors are examining new bank products or activities. And then finally, It proved difficult for regulators to rein in profitable legal financial activities without hard evidence that the activities were creating unwarranted risk.
Mm-hmm.
Now, all of those things suggest that when activities are profitable, it becomes very hard for regulators to stop them.
Mm-hmm.
What are the, and you should know this by now, what are the pressures that come upon regulators when profitable activities are going on?
Right.
And you might like to stop them.
Right. Well, I think we saw that in late 2006 and 2007 when the bank regulators, the FDIC, working very diligently with our colleagues to tighten up on subprime, to tighten up on Alt-A and non-traditional mortgages, to tighten up on commercial real estate. A lot of industry pushbacks and some, I'll be honest, some pushback from the Hill, too, on some of that. Regulators, somebody has to take away the punch bowl, and it can be very difficult to take away the punch bowl. When, you know, people are making money at it now. And but I think going forward, this is a key lesson learned, and that hopefully the leadership of this body in saying that regulators need to be supported when they try to do that and not pilloried, I think would be helpful.
All right, a key lesson learned, according to Sheila Bair, head of the FDIC, testifying live there before the Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission. Let's get some reaction to that from Greg David, Crane's New York business columnist and director of the Business and Economics Program at the CUNY Graduate School of Journalism, and Nomi Prinz, senior fellow at the liberal think tank Demos, a former investment banker and author of the book It Takes a Pillage, Behind the Bailouts, Bonuses, and Backroom Deals from Washington to Wall Street. And Nomi Prinz, I found that testimony just now very interesting, and Sheila Bair was really making two points, that peer review of financial risk is not sufficient, banks reviewing the practices of other banks, and also she was talking about the power of profitable banks over the regulators. What did you think of that?
Well, it's absolutely true, and one thing that struck me immediately was the use of her tense, which is a regulatory profit served, past tense to keep supervisors away and so forth. Today, the risk has increased of those largest banks to levels above what they were in 2007, obviously above what they were in 2008. Their trading profitability as a percentage of all their profitability has also increased well above other levels, except perhaps with Citigroup that's having a tremendous amount of problems.
Are you saying that major Wall Street firms right now are at risk of another kind of collapse as along the lines of what we saw in the fall of 2008?
Well, not tomorrow, but absolutely. Their risk parameters have increased. Their leverage is slightly down, as Lloyd Blankfein yesterday mentioned on the panel yesterday, but it's not significantly down in general with respect to the practices and the reliance, which was the most important thing to watch for, the reliance of revenue generation coming from trading activities. And this is from their own SEC filings. And we don't have this quarters yet. They're going to be due at the end of this week and next week coming in from the banks to get the final quarter of 2009. But up until that point, there's been an increase in risk, of a substantial increase in reliance on trading. And that's going on right now with government subsidies, some of which have been paid back, a lot of which are still on offer, underlying all of that risk. So it is a burgeoning problem.
So, Greg David, your reaction to Sheila Bair and to Nomi Prinz?
Well, you know, the truth about what's happening on Wall Street is that they're making enormous profits. The estimate is the securities industry will make $60 billion in profits. And you're exactly right, of course. The profits are coming almost completely from trading. They're doing that for two reasons. The other businesses stink, by the way, because the economy is so bad. But these firms are borrowing at no cost. The Fed, the interest rates to these firms are zero. You know what? It's easy to make money when you have no cost of funds. I'm not sure that I agree that the risks are greater. Actually, it's very easy to make money on Wall Street these days and not take any risks. After all, Brian, if I gave you $1 million and said, go invest it, and by the way, you don't pay any interest on it, I'm sure you could do well, too.
I'd probably find a way to lose it. But...
Well, no, that's absolutely true. The cheap money is underlying the positions that are being taken, and yes, you can make money with no money a lot more easily than you can make money without having that underlying capital. But the fact is, it is still over reliance then on trading and on using that capital for trading purposes, you're right, because the other businesses are doing extremely poorly, which should be something this investigation should also be focusing on. Hey, while we're having these conversations with these panels, by the way, the quality of mortgages, of foreclosures, of defaults, of delinquencies, of other types of credit continue to decline underneath you while we are talking about risk.
But Nomi, is there a paradox there that at the same time that you're arguing for more relief for homeowners facing foreclosure, for easier credit for consumers and for small businesses, you're saying that these banks are at greater risk than ever of collapsing? If they're at such risk of failure, wouldn't they be tightening credit, taking fewer risks?
Well, they have been tightening credit with respect to consumers and with respect to businesses, absolutely. They've not necessarily been constraining the types of risks that they're taking on the other side, partially because they have that cheap money and partially because they need to find some way of showing a profit, and it's not coming from the consumer side. So, no, they shouldn't give out dumb loans. But at the same side, without renegotiating the outstanding credits, mortgages or loans or whatever they might be, the banks continue to take losses and the borrowers continue to hurt. And that basically destabilizes the system further. So it's not so much they should give out money for no reason. They have cheap money, and in order to plug the holes and in order to keep the whole system from deflating potentially again and further overall, right now it's doing so just for the consumers, some of that needs to be renegotiated, and credit mm-hmm. does need to be renegotiated, so, and it's not being renegotiated.
Brian, one thing you said, though, you said these institutions are at risk of failure. No, they're not. They're too big to fail. They will never fail. They can't fail. That's the fundamental issue, and I wish this panel would begin to address it. You know, Jamie Dimon said yesterday nobody should be too big to fail, the CEO of J.P. Morgan Chase.
Does that
but
mean
then he
was...
said, don't make me smaller. But, you know, this is a contradiction in terms. The fundamentally, and this is one place in which a lot of people are in agreement, except everyone in Washington, we need institutions that are not too big to fail, and we're not anywhere close to that, and there's nothing in the regulatory schemes that are being discussed that'll get us there.
Let me play you a clip of something else that Jamie Dimon, CEO of J.P. Morgan Chase, said yesterday. This is just a couple of seconds, but it does reflect a major thread of conversation yesterday. This is about what they missed during the housing bubble, only the basic dynamic of capitalism.
Somehow we just missed that home prices don't go up forever.
And I was astonished by that. And again, it's a tiny clip.
Why were you astonished, Brian? We do this all the time. We did it in the internet bubble. We do it in the back to the tulip bubble. We do it all the time.
But these are supposed to be the most sophisticated financial minds in the world who came out of the Ivy League engineering departments and everywhere else and were put into Wall Street, you know, for their acumen. and the basic idea that housing prices can't go up forever was missed.
You know, I used to model those securities, and yes, it is astonishing that the notion of prices going down wasn't put into anybody's head. But the fact is, the information that was coming into those securities from the loans that created them, or that were the base of what became toxic securities, was deteriorating. From 2006 to 2007, the foreclosures on those mortgages in general had increased by 47%. So even though there was this disknowledge of the fact that things could ever go down, the data coming into those securities was definitely weakening. And the reaction of these firms at the time, partially because they were scared and they wanted to get rid of the stuff they were already in, and partially because maybe they did hope things would turn around, but it was to create more product at the worst possible moment. And everything that was created during that period declined even more quickly in value than some of the stuff that was created before that.
So very briefly, before you both go, Greg David, President Obama today is expected to announce a proposal for a set of fees on Wall Street to recoup a lot of the bailout money, but also to discourage stupid risk-taking in the future, because I gather these fees would somehow be tied to an analysis of a company's risk. Do you think that's a smart way to go?
First of all, it sounds very complicated to me, and I can hardly understand it, which should tell you something. No, I'm going to stand with Jamie Dimon on this. Tax policy should not be used to punish people. It doesn't strike me that it makes any good economic sense. Also, it's just a political response to what's happening. If we want to create new taxes, we need to do them in a way that isn't designed to punish.
Nomi Prinz, last word.
Well, I kind of agree on the taxes, but I also think that the bigger thing to do is to really stabilize the system, to detach the risk-taking components of banks from the non-risk, to do a return to a Glass-Steagall, and to create an environment where we don't have to do political gestures of post-taxation after things have fallen apart, or even on bonuses that have been garnered from that, but reduce the risk systemically so that we don't even have to get to the point where we're doing minor cosmetic alterations like that after the fact.
Nomi Prinz, senior fellow at Demos, author of It Takes a Pillage, Behind the Bailouts, Bonuses, and Backroom Deals from Washington to Wall Street. Greg David, Crane's New York business columnist and director of the Business and Economics Program at the CUNY Graduate School of Journalism. Thank you both very much.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And coming up in a minute, our series on parenting conversation taboos continues with the question, what won't you sacrifice for your kids? What won't you sacrifice for your kids? And can we actually talk about that? Stay tuned.